123. I think we could all recite that anyway. So maybe as it's up there, we can read it together. It's a very familiar one. Some of the words might be slightly different because maybe some of us are used to the AV from our childhood, and this probably is NIV. So this is Psalm 23, a psalm of David. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not be in want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Beautiful psalm. So we're going to focus on that the next sort of probably three times that I'm here, so going into towards Christmas. So we're going to be looking at it in a kind of patchwork kind of way. I need to switch this on. So that's a rather stereotypical English look at Jesus. Forgive that. But the words are great. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. So we're going to look at that part of Psalm 23 today. An alternative would be, I am my own shepherd. I am always in need. I stumble from shopping mall to shopping mall and doctor to doctor, seeking relief but never finding it. I creep through the valley of the shadow of death and fall apart. I fear everything from vaccines to power lines, and I'm starting to act like my mother. I go down to the weekly staff meeting and I'm surrounded by enemies. I go home and even my goldfish scowls at me. I anoint my headache with Nurofen. My Jack Daniels runneth over. Surely misery and misfortune will follow me, and I will live in self-doubt for the rest of my lonely life. So that's the choice, isn't it? We have the choice of a life of independence from God, proud to be maybe destroying ourselves little by little, or do we choose to follow God? So this verse or two here hopefully more accurately describes our lives and our relationship. So trusting God means travelling light. So this is a picture of the group of us in, Steve will remind me, 2014, in India, top of a place you'll recognise, maybe three or four people in that group. And it was a good time, but going over there, we had issues with the travel, and us that took huge, big suitcases, our suitcases managed to get lost on the way to India. But there was one very wise lady in the midst of us, and she put not much into two very little suitcases, and she got everything with her right from the start. So that was just a reminder to me this morning that sometimes we say we trust God, but we make ourselves very secure at the same time, don't we? We buffer ourselves so that nothing's going to hurt us, and we don't show our trust in God by the things that we do. So the first question is, do we trust God? So this Psalm 23 is by far the best known of the 150 books of the Bible. Often use it in funerals. We often hear it in weddings, school assemblies, all different things like that. It's familiar to people. If I go and visit somebody by their bedside when they're very ill, I often read Psalm 23, not because it's just known by them, but also because it so accurately reflects our lives. It speaks to the reader of a journey that is a whole lifetime's journey, rather than just you commit yourself to God, that's it, hang in there for the rest of your life, and then you get to heaven. Wonderful. I don't see that in the Bible. I see a continual journey of maybe ups and downs as well, but a steady journey where we trust God more and more. And it reminds me also, the Psalm 23, of Psalms 120 to 134. And they're called the Psalms of Ascent. And they were sung by the pilgrims when they went to Jerusalem. So once every, maybe three or four times a year, the pilgrims would be told they need to go to Jerusalem. You can imagine that place absolutely full with everybody coming in from the whole of Israel to worship Jehovah. Just incredible sense. But as they walked, they would sing the Psalms. These Psalms were meant to be sung, remember. So Psalm 23 is not named as one, but it seems very like them. It reminds us of journeys that we've been on, the highs and the lows, the peaks and the valleys. There was a lovely elderly lady who used to come to our church in Bradford and Avon, and she got very annoyed during lockdown. She'd survived the Blitz in Bath, and her home had been bombed at one time. The church that she went to had been bombed, but even as a child, she managed to find another church to attend. And she said, "Well, why are you locked down and not? I'm not allowed to come on Sundays to worship. When even when the Germans were bombing us, we still went to church." And so she found that very difficult and very isolated until we taught her how to go on Zoom. And we had a picture of Jesus hanging up in the church, a bit like that first one, where Jesus is white, obviously English or American. And she loved it. He was dressed as a Jewish shepherd of biblical times, and he was carrying a sheep. You may know it. I think it's quite a common picture. And she was very sad when, during that time at lockdown and church upheaval, the picture disappeared, never to be found again. So that leads me on to my first question, is what do you consider God to be? So who is your God? Is he a genie in a bottle that when you pray to God, God gives you immediate answers and you're happy again until the next crisis? You pray to God, he immediately answers again, everything's good. I think it's brilliant if your life consists of that, but that's not the way life is for me. Is he gentle Jesus, meek and mild? So always there to give you a hug, that feeling of warmth, that's brilliant, isn't it? But at some points, Jesus was quite straight and strong with people. So could he be a sweet grandpa, somebody who's been around a long time, is always there, not judging you, but is always there to hear you? Or just a busy dad who turns up only on Sundays and gives his time to his family at that point and then goes away in the week and you can ignore him and get on with things? Or, as many people I think today feel, a God who looks nice but says very little, doesn't get involved in our lives, let us get on with our lives. When we need him, we can turn to him. But the rest of the time, he just goes, yeah, just do whatever you feel like. Well, I think the most important thing to recognise about God is he's ungovernable. Else, he couldn't be God, could he? If we could sort God out completely, he wouldn't be God. So much that affects us, the weather. Who hasn't been affected by the weather in August? It's not been quite the dazzling summer that maybe some of us thought it would be. The terrain, when you go up a high mountain, you can get breathless and things can happen because of your breathlessness. Your health, suddenly you get a run of appointments from the hospital and you're going in there all the time and you feel drained because of it. And maybe other people, somebody can come up to you and say something that is really not very nice and you can be really made down by it. Well, God has no limitations. He's forever the same. So he's the same God for King David, 1,000 years before Jesus. He's the same God for Moses, Abraham, Peter, the Apostle Peter, and today. The same God. So when we read the Bible, we can say, this is the God that we worship. The more you read the Bible, the more you find out who is God. You need a God. Well, I need a God anyway, who, while so mind-numbingly mighty, can touch you with feather-like gentleness. I think that's really important, that God doesn't move us forward in the pace that perhaps sometimes we need to be, but he's very kind and gentle, but he has plans for our lives as well. So that's what our God is. So what about you and me? So I know that some days I feel great and I wake up and I think, wow, the world's my oyster. And other days I feel, that I just have to crawl through the day and make the most of it and just sort of end the day grateful that I've got through it. And just that sense with David was he was very clear about his emotions. There were times of crisis for him. The Lord is my shepherd. Possibly overused, possibly sentimentalized expression, but still contains great truth. I don't know if Marshall will back this up, but what dafter an animal than a sheep? An animal that will often do exactly the thing that it shouldn't do. And that seems to describe many of us. We have two choices. One is clearly the right thing to do, but we choose the other one. Goodness knows why. Maybe I'm just talking about my life and you always choose the right way. That's brilliant. But I know for me, I so often have chosen the wrong thing, and it's only through God's safekeeping and protection of me that it hasn't turned out really bad. And sheep are not known for their ability to fight or to defend themselves. My nan used to be, she had an incident, I think, in a field of sheep when she was younger, and she was really scared walking through a field of sheep. So she'd walk through a field of cows quite happily, and I think cows can be quite interesting at times, but she wouldn't walk through a field of sheep, and she'd think that they were all going round her to gang up on her and to attack her from the side. So it was really hard, but I could never quite understand her issue, because to me, sheep, they're not equipped to fight predators, and they need the protection of somebody greater and stronger. Isaiah, the prophet Isaiah, said, "We all, the sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned to our own way. And the Lord has laid on him," that's Jesus, that's a prophecy about Jesus, "the sin of us all." So without Jesus, we are sunk. But Jesus came in and through God sending him, made it possible for us to know God. But perhaps you're thinking, well, I feel slightly insulted at being a sheep. I've seen the way they act. I'm quite a sensible person. I don't act in that way. Well, okay, self-reliance. Can you do this? Can you control your mood? I know that I can't control my mood. I find it very hard not to be moody sometimes. Can you control your mood? Can you smile at everybody and feel life is good every single moment of every day? Can you be at peace with everyone? So never have an argument with anyone. Never feel, somebody's got an issue with me. Do you have no fears? You know, I think I said recently that the Bible contains 365 commands, do not fear. And I know people have said before, well, preachers have said before, that means that you're not meant to fear. I think that that's true, but also God recognises that we fear an awful lot of things, don't we? Fear an awful lot of things. When I went to bed last night up the stairs, there was a giant spider up there. And I was just thinking, the number of people that our next door neighbour in Bradford, if she had a giant spider like that, she'd be on the phone to me and say, "Can you come around my house and get rid of that spider? Because I can't come down the stairs until that spider is out of the way." So we have fears, don't we? Let's be honest with ourselves. And do you not need any forgiveness at all? Have you done everything right in your life that when you look back, you go, "Yeah, it was all great. I'm just a wonderful person." So many Christians, running on the back of that, many Christians are overwhelmed by their guilt, discontent, weariness, grief, doubts, loneliness, and fear. And travelling light, as that wise lady did, means trusting God with the burdens that you were never meant to bear. Otherwise, those burdens pile up and eventually they become so great that we can't move. And that's what we're seeing so much today, is people that are so full of anxiety that they just don't know where to go, don't know how to move on. So what can we learn from David's view of God? 3,000 years ago, David wrote these Psalms, still relevant today. What can we learn? "The Lord is my shepherd," he said. And by the time of the birth of Jesus, shepherds were like seen as really quite a bad lot. If you were a shepherd, you couldn't give evidence in a Jewish court because nobody would take yourself seriously. They were treated as very bad people. But at the time of David, they were treated with a lot of respect, and many of the Jews were shepherds, as David himself was at one point. And it was a challenging, skillful job. Israel in the summer is a very hot place. I've got two temperatures on my app on my phone. One is Kongsbury, which is the nearest I get to Rington, and the other one is Jerusalem. And Jerusalem all this month has been 32 degrees maximum sunshine all day long, every day. So that's great if you're going there maybe as a tourist, but it's very hard work if you're trying to find grass and pasture for your sheep. So a very skillful job. And David proclaims that the Lord is his shepherd. He lacked nothing. In other words, David was content. The good shepherd provided him with grass to eat and protection from wild animals. Paul, at the end of his life, the last letter that he wrote probably, which was a letter to Philippi, he said, a bit more than that, I've learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all this through him who gives me strength. So his reliance was not on how much food he had, how big his pension was, how much security he had behind him. His trust was in Jesus and in Jesus alone. And Jesus declared that amazing passage in Matthew 11. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Jesus promises us rest from our burdens. He promises us abundant, joyful lives. So I know for some Christians that we can end up feeling more burdened than we were before we were Christians, before we were believers. And there's something askew there then, isn't there? Something to address. Maybe you've been caught up in the pressure to be religiously good. Maybe you feel burdened when you come to church that you should be doing this job or you should be doing that job. Some of the most joyful times in the week for me was on a Sunday when I was in the shop in Rington, and that was after walking home. Rowan, I and several other people led a youth group, and I used to go around and pick up the teenagers in the minibus, and at the end of the evening take them back home and then drop the minibus off and then walk home. And it was just such a great feeling walking home to feel kind of God's blessing on that. So it's not to say don't do anything, but just do it and understand that God will bless you through it. You may feel that you're vulnerable and you haven't got the gifts necessarily. I always feel that God gives the gifts to those who do the work. I've seen that time and time again. Sheep are being very productive when they lie down in green pastures. The sheep will continue to munch away at the grass. And so we can experience God's blessing as we joyfully volunteer in his service. God loves a cheerful giver. Wouldn't it be great to feel every day that we put a smile on God's face? So, big question, how can we know contentment fully? And I know that our lives now are full of different ways that we can find contentment. I hear people that go away on camps, they go away on retreats, lots of different things to enable them to feel contentment. So what is the Christian angle on this? Well, first of all, receive contentment as a gift. Thank God for the fact that you are in a good place, that you're in green pastures. Receive contentment as a gift. So we may spend a short while in the pastures green, being refreshed, filling up for the journey ahead. But we know, don't we, that our human spirit moves us on. It presses us to grow, maybe not geographically, but as human beings. We need to go on. And often it can be difficult to perceive how we are progressing. It feels like sometimes that we fall for the same temptations repeatedly over the years. The great thing is God doesn't say to us, okay, you've got six shots at this and then you're out. You know, God continually forgives us whenever we come to him and say, sorry, God forgives us. And God is intent on making us complete human beings, completely who we should be. So that's not that we all become a homogenous whole, but that individually we become who we should be. God is intent on that. And I think for me, one of the joys is seeing people that are just growing in Jesus, that I can see the marks of Jesus on. So don't worry about others. Don't think, oh, that person's struggling in that way, and judge them for it, because we've all got challenges that are different from each other. Don't get frustrated that new Christians aren't immediately mature and wise. This is a process of many years. I've been a Christian for over 50 years. So part of one of the trips I did to Kolkata, we went to see this young woman in her home, and all her family were there. There was like 30 or 40 of them. And there was just a group of us students went to see her. And she was what the church leaders said was a new convert to Christianity. And we went into her home, and on one part of the wall was a picture of Jesus, and next to it was a picture of Ganesh. And I thought it was wonderful, because the Christian leaders said, what we do is we pray that gradually Jesus becomes the central figure in her life, and that picture of Ganesh gradually disappears. And I think that's a really good way for us who are perhaps mature Christians to see young Christians. It's just to work patiently, to pray for those people, and to see the work of God in their lives. This young person was 22, I think, when we went to see her. So it's now probably 20 years on, 15 years on since I saw her. The work of God would have gone on in her life, purifying her and giving her a commitment to Jesus. So how do we work with God as he works within us to will and to do of his good pleasure? Great thing, isn't it? Not just down to us to do it, sort out our lives. God is doing it for us. We need to cooperate with God, but God is at work in us. God transforms our hearts. That's his will. And one of the things I'd encourage you to do is acquire the habit of reflection. It's a great thing to do. End of the day, just spend a few minutes just trying. I know life is busy, but just spend a few minutes just thinking back over the day. The great John Wesley encouraged spiritual journals, so that you wrote just down your life each day in a kind of spiritual way, seeing what you did that was good, what you did that wasn't good, things that you did that were kind of in error, stuff that you might have said that was understood differently than you hoped that it would be. But also thoughts about the working of God in that day. That's a really good thing to do. So you can either write things down, or you can just reflect in your head. I often do it listening to music, so that's a kind of good way to do it. And some questions we could reflect upon. Did I argue when I should have apologized? Did I talk when I should have listened? And did I try to fix it myself instead of giving it to God? So those are key questions that we can ask ourselves each day. We're in the business of self-improvement, weirdly enough, isn't it? But we're also understanding that God does 99.9% of the work in us. His Holy Spirit is faithful. He will not fail us. And it's the journey of a lifetime. I've been beside people when they've died. They're not perfect human beings. I've never seen a perfect human being. I don't know if any of you have, but I've never seen one. God has a whole lifetime to work in us. Please don't give up on yourself, because God will not give up on you. Amen.